Now, RNIB is increasingly focused on removing barriers that people with sight loss face in participating equally in society. And I'm going to give you the details of how you can take part in a survey a little later. But right now, what are the kind of barriers that hold you back or you find make life more difficult? Paul Quigley has recently lost all his sight and, well, a bit of a white cane warrior, aren't you, sir?
Certainly am, Simon. Thank you for having me on the show again. White cane warrior. Yep, absolutely. Without it, I don't know what I'd do.
And, I mean, sometimes you get quite vocal about things, your frustrations, but, you know, sometimes you have to, don't you?
Well, you do, because even though we've got legislation in place that people know about called the Equalities Act 2010, it's giving that legislation teeth. That's the hard bit, is that what do we do as disabled, visually impaired people when things do go wrong, as you quite rightly say, this inclusivity issue. There isn't really a procedure. There isn't a formalised procedure where people with VI, if they have a problem, what do they do? Who do they contact to actually get it rectified?
So speaking from a personal point of view yourself, Paul, and you've recently moved to a new area this year as well. What kind of things in everyday life do you find? I find this a difficult to answer when I'm asked, because you tend not to dwell on it until you're faced with it again and you go, oh, that always annoys me. What kind of things do you feel are barriers?
Barriers. Lots of barriers, and they never get complete. You never tick all the boxes. The problem with them is that, for example, correspondence, you know, letters and things like that, when they arrive through the post, they're a problem. You have to get in touch with these different organizations to let them know that you have got a visual impairment, and either you want Braille, you want large print, or you want audio CD. Some of these organizations, the bigger ones, know all about that. And when you request audio CD, if you can't see at all, you'll get it. But even then, things can go wrong. They send the wrong format, so you don't get the correspondence and you can't read it at all, so you don't know you've got anything. And then you get followed up and you get chased and things like that, and you don't even know that you've got it. So there's all manner of different things that are frustrating. And quite honestly, you know, they're technically breaking the law. The smaller companies are even worse, because they don't realize that there's legislation in place, and they send stuff out in standard format, which of course is like, you know, Coles to Newcastle. You can't do anything with that. So those are day-to-day correspondence barriers. They are huge. Mobility, we talked about those before, whether you're on foot as a white cane warrior, like I talked about last time, where you hit street furniture, which are either being moved or damaged, and the procedure for reporting that, that's, there's no formal report procedure for that, whereas they should be. So that should be in this inclusivity report. Transport and public transport, some of them are pretty good, but for example, like our trains are very good normally. If you go on, like, I won't advertise, but some mainline train operators, they're pretty good at getting you on and off trains. In fact, I'd say they're excellent at that. But the bus service, that's hit and miss, because if you try and alight a bus, the driver hasn't really got a spot for you. Even though I think there are delineated seats near the front, you don't always guarantee, because you're always fighting with a woman and a child to get that one. So you can't, sometimes people will give up the seat, but even then the driver's concentrating on driving. If you need to get off at a certain spot, that can always be troublesome, because he might forget you and you end up shooting past your bus stop, and then you get off at the next stop and have to somehow navigate across the main road and go back. You know, it really does put people off. There should be some real procedure in place that if a visually impaired person gets on, there is a seat or something, there's a procedure, so that there's no way that that person can overshoot, because otherwise it puts you off. It certainly puts me off getting on a bus, because I think, oh God, if I get on and I don't get near the front and I sort of wander down the aisle and sit on a lady's lap, which normally what happens, I end up sitting on someone because they don't, you know, they go silent. And they kind of, I'm assuming they're looking at you and they don't realize. And then you go and you sit on someone. I mean, it is embarrassing. There's all sorts of ridiculous sort of scenarios. You could almost write a comedy script out of that, but it ain't very funny after about 33 times. The first half a dozen times, very funny. After that, it just gets frustrating. So there needs to be a procedure. That is a barrier to inclusivity and taking part in society. Those silly little things that it needs to be, so that people don't even have to. It's a no-brainer, as they said, that you could just get on the bus. You know that there's going to be some procedure where you can sit near the driver and he's alerted, and it's flagged up that this person is on the bus now. They need to be set off at that certain point, and he doesn't forget. You know, he's, oh, sorry, I forgot. Yeah, you know, that happens a lot. You know, it's not acceptable, because it's like you're kind of having to rely on their good nature, and that's not really, you know, it's not really how it should be, should it? It's not a level playing field.
And that's where obviously RNIB are trying to get bus companies signed up to a charter. Yes, or they sign up to sort of taking some of these things on more seriously. Of course, visual impairment isn't the only disability that they're dealing with on a daily basis, because I've heard where they get into awkward positions where, you know, they can only take one, perhaps, mobility scooter at a time, then somebody wants to come on with a pram, and there's not enough room, so who gives way, who has the right of way?
Yes.
So it's quite a complex thing, but I think if there is a real structure there for these things, then at least the driver himself can say, well, this is the procedure.
Well, there should be it's like supply and demand then in economics, isn't it? If a driver's getting three wheelchairs a week, six disabled people on average, and, you know, they actually are statistics, so they collate stats. So they don't just sort of let, you know, on and off the bus. They actually do collate the stats. Then they could work out, do you know what? We need more seats up at the front. We need six rather than one. You know, they know that's the thing that they should work out, do some analytics, find out to what, you know, how many as a percentage, and they should take stats so that when somebody gets on with a C+ card or whatever, and they say, oh, okay, you know, that is registered, and so how many, what's the frequency of that? Do a little bit more scientific than just hit and miss is what we're doing at the moment. We're assuming that people are going to be good natured, but as you say, accidents are happening and people are getting dropped off at the wrong point, and that could be a massive risk. I mean, if you put someone off at the wrong stop, oh, sorry, mate, you know, I missed that one. I was just concentrating on the traffic, and then you put you off, and then you think you're in a completely alien territory. You don't know where you are in the world. You know that thing you think, oh, I'm not going on the bus again. It's terrifying. You can be right in the middle of nowhere, and you've been put off on the bus because you overshoot. No, it's not acceptable. And that has to be collated so that you know that when you get on that bus, like you do when you're going from London to Manchester to Euston, in my case, that you're gonna get to Euston. You're not gonna be dropped off in Crewe or something like that. Oh, sorry, mate, we forgot you. It can't happen. It just can't, because that terrifies people. They'll stay at home, they won't go out, they won't be independent, and you might as well not have you know, all these other wonderful schemes like Motability is a separate scheme, but I mean those sorts of schemes where it's encouraging people to get out and about and, you know, take excursions and join society and be inclusive. It puts people off because they haven't really thought it through. It's all very well having a notion of, oh, we'll do some legislation, it's all very sort of virtue signaling, it's very nice. The practical side, that's where we really need to drill down into that. What's the actual stats? How many people are we getting? VI people, I'm not so concerned about, you know, people in wheelchairs, because they have societies that can look after them. But for the VI community that, you know, I'm part of, you're part of, and where people, most of the people listening to this are part of, you know, we need to be more vocal. And I think this is a great scheme that you were telling me about just before we went on air, Simon. Sounds like a great idea, and I think hopefully we will make some progress with this.
Mm. Now, take a sip of tea.
I don't have tea, darling. I have water.
Have a sip of water. Because I know what you get like, and then you'll dehydrate, and then, you know.
I am doing already. I was singing before. I've been rehearsing this morning. That's why I'm a bit hoarse.
And for those of you who are not aware, Paul Quigley is a musician, and we'll talk about this another day. He's recording an album just now, and you may have heard of a heavy metal band called Hell's Bells from the past. So there's enough information to be going on with.
Absolutely. Available in all good record shops, people, if you can find one.
Is that me? I've got a thumping headache all of a sudden.
That's my neighbour tap dancing. No, that's the guy in the kitchen. Sorry. It's a kitchen fitter putting the ceiling up, I think.
So you're getting work done in the house and you're on radio?
I know.
What kind of... I mean, talking about barriers to good radio.
What? It'll stop in a minute. They'll have another tea break and it'll stop. You couldn't make it up, could you?
So, what about websites and accessibility? Because the problem, I think, with a website is that if a website's built from scratch with accessibility in view, then it works a certain way. But when you're trying to adapt a website and then make it accessible, I think that's where sometimes the problem can come.
Absolutely. I mean, my particular with RP, it's very difficult to see, and I've got macular degeneration as well as peripheral. So, you know, what is left is almost impossible. I would use like a text to speech reader. And of course, that, whether or not a site is web enabled for text to speech readers, is a completely different area again. I mean, for people who do have some residual vision that try to navigate it, I can imagine it is a pain. It was certainly a pain for me when I, you know, years ago when I still had some vision. But I mean, now it's just a nightmare, quite honestly. They're not anywhere near. The accessibility element is terrible, and I think this should be included as well as in the inclusivity survey that they're doing, that you know, corporates and anyone who's offering a business need to really spend some money and time on making it so it is accessible. And I think there's a lot of work that should still be done, because it's impossible, you know, to get through, navigate from screen to screen to screen to get to, you know, the buy button or the order button or whatever it is you're trying to do, you know, or rather than just reading. And I mean, straightforward reading is relatively straightforward for people who've got jaws and, you know, Zoom text and other bits of Windows software. I don't know about the Apple Mac, but certainly for Windows, you know, this has been for years, hasn't there? But now, what with all these different sort of, you know, e-commerce sites, that makes it even more tricky, because a lot of businesses tend to want you to, you know, interact with them online, whether it's, you know, you bill payments for mobile phones, for utility companies and all this sort of thing, and tax returns, of course, that sort of thing. It's all online. So there's very few people you can actually phone up and just say, well, I've actually got a problem here. You know, your site isn't web enabled. There needs to be almost helplines, you know, a 999 for disabled people to bail them out, to say, look, I'm stuck on this screen. Does such a thing exist? I would very much doubt it. But again, yeah, this needs to be included.
Do you know, the thing that annoys me, and I tend to think I'm in that kind of crossover generation when it comes to computers, because I stayed away from them until I was in my 40s. And yeah. So I can use them to get about and things like that. But I'm not the best with working with computers. And I dare say there's people worse than me. Take a simple thing. You're in at home, you're sitting Friday night, you want to get yourself something from a takeaway shop. Mm-hmm. How many of these shops now are going to the fact that you have to order it online now? You can't just phone up for your meal. It becomes this. Now, if you're set up for it, fair enough. But if it's not your world, it's starting to exclude people from even simple things like that.
Well, you've summed it up there, haven't you? There's a barrier. Now, I would say that that company involved is probably a local pizzeria or something, and they probably thought, oh, we haven't got the time or the money to invest in that. Well, I think that has to be the legislation. It needs to cascade down from the corporates down to anybody who wants to do business. It has to include everybody. They can't just pick and choose, so that people with VI can't, you know, do that, can't take part in that and order a pizza or an Indian or whatever they want to order. Yeah, I totally agree with you. Whereas the days gone where you could just pick up the phone and do it verbally. I mean, for me, that's how I would do it. And I wouldn't try and even struggle with going to go online, quite honestly. If you know, they'd lose my business. They'd simply lose my business. So they're excluding, you know, 20% of the market of these people in this country who have a disability, of which probably 4 million have a visual impairment. So there's 4 million people in a target market they're not going to get business from. So that's their loss, isn't it? But how stupid. I mean, they could have spent an amount of money and have some sort of backup system and process whereby if there's a visually impaired person arrives at their website, that there is like an almost like a help button they can hit and just say, listen, I can't navigate your screens, but I want to do this in the old-fashioned way, like they do with checks. You know, I mean, I think banks, for example, slipping from food to banks still have a legal requirement to maintain checks for people who, you know, with VI, for example, who you can't navigate online and chip and pin in stores where they're having to go to a checkout and they can't see to type in pins and things. They're still able by a legal requirement to actually sign as you used to do in the old days. So there are still old systems around, but not many people know about it, and they get kind of shepherded into this new way thinking but you need to, again, a course in education of what is available to VI people who know what they can, what their rights are, and an emergency bailout number that they can call for help, whether the RNIB can run that or a separate charity, I don't know, or even government. I mean, why not? So yeah, all different sort of systems and processes are still, there's many, many loopholes for when you're actually living and breathing this 24/7. So yeah, that's a great example of that one, Simon. Ordering a pizza can become a nightmare, and you can end up being very skinny very soon.
Hey, well, from this discussion that Paul and I have had, we weren't trying to solve anything. What we're trying to do is highlight that what a barrier to you might not be a barrier to me, or I might think, you know what, that is a barrier. I'd forgotten about that.
Yes,
but
yes.
If you want to take part in this survey, you can find the survey by what you do is search online for SurveyMonkey RNIB Barriers Survey. Or you can just...
What's that again, Simon? Can you say that again? I missed that.
Pay attention, Paul.
Go on.
It's search online for SurveyMonkey RNIB Barriers Survey, or by calling 020-7391...
7391 2123. Got it.
Yeah, and you can just leave your details there and somebody will get back in touch with you. But Paul, we'll let you get your renovations carried out, and it's lovely to chat with you again, my friend.
And you too, Simon.
What's the weather like in Manchester?
It's peeing down. It's always raining in Manchester. Even when it's sunny, it's raining. There's a cloud hovering around over the Pennines, south of the Pennines here. Yep, it is always raining, but I love it. I wouldn't move anywhere else.
Paul, great to speak with you. Chat with you very soon.
Take care. Thank you, Simon. All the best.